Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. This time, Aston Villa are losers, I guess, once again, I should say, losing 2-0 to Southampton at St. Mary's Stadium. An effort that many will say was probably the worst they've seen, maybe some in a lifetime, depending on how old you are, maybe the worst of the season. I guess to summarize it up, it was absolutely dreadful. But of course, I am not here alone. Never am. I am here with my good pal, Danny. Danny Raza, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Cole. I'm doing all right. I am obviously a little bit disappointed with the Villa, but it is what it is. We're getting used to it. And it's 1 week away from the League Cup final. You know what? In my head right there, I was just going through like all the different sponsors it's had in the last few years. And I just didn't want to say the wrong thing. And I'm not going to state them. But yeah, the League Cup final or the Carabao Cup final. I'm looking forward to that at the very least.
Should we just like refer to it as like every name it's had throughout this to really confuse people? Like,
what? Carling Cup got the...
Was it the Werther's Cup?
Coca-Cola Cup as well, wasn't it?
Coca-Cola Cup. Yeah, that's right. There was it it's like the Data Systems Cup or something like that? Am I right in thinking that? This is like back...
But anyways, I'll rein it in there. Sorry to cut you off, Liam, because I want to introduce you. You will hear another voice here. And of course, that is our good buddy, Liam, from the 7500 to Holt website. He is a contributor. He is a up and coming young star within the industry, I'd like to say. James would always say that, so I feel like I have to say that as well to bang him up a little bit here. But Liam, how you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Nice intro there. I'm really good. How are you guys?
Not too bad. You're very polite. I'm not used to this because, like, in the past, and I'm sure Holtcast listeners will know, me, James, and Danny would take shots at each other. Not like they're too, like, rated R kind of thing, but you're so polite, and it's nice to see that. But anyways, guys, let's get right into it because there's not a struggle to talk about things, but there's definitely not too much because, let's be honest, Villa didn't put up much of a fight yesterday. Danny, I'll come to you first. Let's get your initial thoughts on the starting lineup. We'll start there because, of course, we had Drinkwater drop out, went to more of a usual lineup. Mings comes in for Angles. So with that being said, what were your thoughts on the lineup? And if we focus on Angles here for a second, what do you think that did to maybe even him? Because, you know what, it was a blunder against Spurs, and he finds himself back on the bench.
I mean, I thought it was the correct lineup to start with. He clearly, as well as he played against Spurs last week, he did make those blunders. He did give away the penalty, and he did. He was at fault for that last goal. So I can understand why Dean Smith's gone, well, you know, let's just put Tyrone back in there. Maybe we'll get some balance back in that defence. Unfortunately, that balance did not exist. It was gone again straight from the off. It's funny because, yeah, I did think it was the correct lineup. El Ghazi, Grealish, and Samatta as the front three. I think it kind of writes itself, unless you want to toy with the idea of playing Trezeguet ahead of El Ghazi. And in terms of the midfield, I think Drinkwater going out again, right decision. You want Nakamba in there. You want Nakamba and Douglas Luiz in there. Theoretically, you've got two battlers, which is what you want against Southampton. You certainly, you know, knowing that they're the kind of team that are going to press you, you certainly don't want somebody like Danny Drinkwater, who has looked off the pace for the last few games.
Absolutely. I think the thing here, and Liam, I'll come to you right now. Let's stick with the topic of Angles. What are your thoughts, essentially, on him being dropped? Obviously, Mings comes back in, it's a given, but does any part of you feel like he should have slid in somewhere in that back three?
Personally, for me, if you go back to the start of the season, Mings and Engels, I thought, were a fantastic partnership, and I thought they played really well, but in that back four, we did get exposed quite a lot, so I appreciate that we have gone back to this back three, and I personally believe that Engels is the right man to be in this back three. Yes, he made a mistake against Tottenham to allow Son to score the winning goal, but him alongside Mings, and really, in my opinion, Chester, but we've loaned him out to Stoke now, are three patterns, tenacious players who are going to get the ball and assure you that they're going to protect the goalkeeper, and they're distributed to the wing backs and the midfielders.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Actually, you bring up a great point here, Daniel. I'll ask you this right now. James Chester, would he have added any value to this? I'm not saying for this game in particular, but Liam does bring up a good point with the grinders, the battlers. James Chester, albeit we don't know what kind of center back he's like after this injury and how horrific it really was for him, would he have been a player that could have helped us in this fight?
If I'm being honest, I think we made the right decision to loan him back to Stoke. I think maybe we did need another centre half in January, possibly. But he, you know, he was coming back from a very, very bad injury. And it's not something that I think we'd have wanted to risk, especially when the defence has already been so all over the place. I mean, Liam makes a good point. If James Chester was the same James Chester that he was in the Championship for us last season and the season before, then obviously I think it'd be brilliant for us to have him in that defence. But I just think that we're probably missing a little bit of quality, because Konsa and Hawes, they're not quite Premier League quality yet, and I think that is a struggle. But yeah, I just think, yeah, look, if the only contradiction for me is that we started playing Danny Drinkwater despite the fact he'd barely played any football. So I guess the counter argument there is that, well, you know, why didn't we allow the same sort of luxury to James Chester? Cole, I'm quite interested to know what you'd play as the defence, if I'm being totally honest, because again, Liam makes a good point. 4-4-2, is that some, not 4-4-2, and sorry, 4 at the back, is that something that we have to switch to now? Because it was awful for us.
It's tough, because it's interesting, because when we had the 4-4-3, or 4-4-3, wow, 4-3-3, if I can do my maths correctly, wow. With that whole formation, obviously we saw it work time and time again for a little bit, and then of course things got stale pretty quickly, and that was pretty evident, and then we switched to this formation. Now it just seems like it's happening all over again, so it's almost like, do we stick and twist and go back to the old, or do we find something anew, really? Because I'm kind of feeling the first issue is obvious. If one of these center backs goes down, there's going to be a clear issue, because then you're down to probably angles coming in, and then really who's behind him. That's one thing that always has concerned me with this, especially with Chester leaving. The other thing is just pure coverage, and I think with the Southampton game, it was a perfect example, because Southampton were evidently able to keep our key players, and especially the wingers, out wide as possible. So you had El Ghazi before he came off, and even Grealish constantly out wide, kind of crossing in box balls that were going into the box for more of a hope and a prayer argument more than anything. Then they were essentially able to dominate the midfield. Like, if you look at probably 75 minutes of that game, 100% of that was Southampton dominate the middle of the park. Nakamba just got constantly overran. Douglas Luiz playing beside him a little bit more advanced at times, just didn't track back enough, and it was evident. And I think, first of all, and I'll come to you, Liam, about this, because I think this is a good thing to bring up. Yeah. Why do you think it took Dean Smith so long? Maybe it wasn't just him, but why do you think it took so long to switch back to more of a 4-3-3, where we're going to have a more packed midfield? Because in my opinion, that should have happened in the first 20 minutes.
Well, I believe in pre-season, Smith and Terry did not like the three at the back, or five at the back, if you like. And they were really wanted to play this 4-3-3 formation, because in the midfield, as you said, you've got two solid centre-backs. You're not exposing yourself, but then you're not being too defensive either. But for me, I would probably stick with the 4-3-3. I think I would put Mings and Engels in at the back as well, because, again, against Tottenham at the start of the season, I thought they were brilliant together. Personally, I think 4-3-3 is a great formation to play. You say against Man City, but who knows what happened in that game.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one, especially. Danny, I'll come to you next. Because formation-wise, do you think we need to go back to a 4-3-3? Because when I look at striker-wise especially, I think Samatta, in my opinion, fits that mold a little bit more than Wesley did, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's the one thing saving me from feeling like a hypocrite for kind of feeling like 4-3-3 should probably come back. Because, look, I honestly hated it. I hated the way we were playing in it, because we were totally pressed back. Like, nobody was allowing us any room to go forward. The fullbacks, Target and Gilbert, who quite possibly are two of our most forward-going players at times, especially Matt Target, they'd be pretty much rendered oblivious. And I think, it wasn't working for us at all. But I guess part of that was that Wesley was not the guy for that formation, because he had to be back all the time. We'd felt like we were basically playing with a false nine and then two wingers, and it wasn't suiting us. Maybe with Samatta in there, maybe with somebody in there with a killer instinct who's, you know, going to be available in the box, perhaps it'll work a little bit better this time. But it doesn't fill me with any confidence whatsoever that we would actually change the way we're playing. Because it just seems like we're too comfortable to sit back and play the majority of the game in our own half. Whatever formation you're playing, I don't care what formation you're playing, in fact, that is not a problem that's going to get sorted out just by changing the shape.
Yeah, true. It comes down to basics, and we're just not doing the basics right, and it's been evident for a while. We all know Dean Smith, his ethos is attack-minded, and you're going to concede, but his kind of thing is you're going to score more than you concede, and it's just not happening right now. And it's kind of been that case really all season. Guys, let's get kind of back into the game here. Let's go over to the first goal, because it happened 8 minutes in, and it's that man again. And I feel like I'm saying this every week, because there's just someone on every team that just has a great record, it seems like, against scoring against Villa, and that being Shane Long. 8 minutes in, Gineppo fires in a kind of mid-range cross, and to be appropriate for younger listeners, it goes off his member from the camera angle. So one way to score a goal, that's for sure.
What's a member call?
His member would be his private area, his frontal private area.
I knew what a member was.
Thanks. I knew you were gonna do something like that, but anyways, yeah. So I'm flustered now. Like, I don't even know what to say. Jesus, I'm leaving that in. But anyways, so off the back of that, it's 1-0, and you're looking at that as maybe more of a Courtney Haas error in terms of tracking his man, because he does leave him pretty wide open. Let's go with you, Liam, first. How did you feel about that goal? It kind of seemed like it was inevitable, but how did you see it breaking down?
Well, it's a perfect example of how disorganised our defence is. Well, as you said, they easily allowed Gineppo to get onto the right wing. How he got the crossing, I have no clue. And there was a miscommunication between Reina and the defender in the box to allow Shane Long to score. I think it was too easy of a goal to score for Southampton, and we could have easily prevented it if the defence communicated with one another. Surely with this new three at the back formation, we're more secure at the back. With Southampton having very artful players on the wing, it's almost as if Hawes and Cons are being dragged out wide, and that creates space in the middle for the likes of Shane Long and Danny Ings to score. So it just needs a bit more organisation and a bit more communication at the back in order for us to perfect that formation. And consequently, because there was no communication, Shane Long scored.
Yeah, absolutely. Danny, I know this. When you look even back further in the play, it was a bit of a fluke, because I can't remember the Southampton player that had the ball. I think he was playing it straight through to, if it was Ings or Long, and it got deflected off a player, and that's how it ended up with Gineppo. But regardless, within that goal, you look at Gilbert, he's way out of position. Him and El Ghazi on that wing yesterday were completely out of position numerous times. And of course, Trezeguet came on after. We'll talk about that issue in a bit. Where does this goal go to fault? Because there's a few instances where I could blame Haas, you could blame Gilbert, you could blame a number of players. So when you look at it, who would you essentially look at as the person who made this error?
By this point, Southampton have already had like 5 shots at goal, and we haven't had any. And it's one of those where I think, again, this is the result of pressing a team high up the pitch. This is the result of and this is why I like Ralf Hasenhüttl. He's basically got a Southampton team who were totally dire and out of confidence to play to basically be a difficult team to play against, because they choke you. They choke the defence. And the amount of men that are forward there for Southampton. And if you get people forward and you do start, you know, trying to whip the ball into the box, and you do start to try and, you know, run at the other team, then inevitably there's going to be bubbles. There's going to be things which end up in your favor. But you have to be in that position of the pitch for that to happen. Yes, that goal, if you look at it in isolation, there's a lot of luck there. There's a lot of coincidences. It goes off Nakamba's knee and it bounces off just in the right position for Gineppo. And, you know, it catches Shane Long just in the right area for it to bed into the back of the net. But again, at this point, this is Villa just starting slow. Why are we sitting back? Why are we allowing Southampton to keep coming at us? Why not, you know, try to combat that by going forward ourselves? Because, you know, the way that we're sat, it's not going to change, you know, Southampton's style of play. They'll press us if we're you know, deep, and they'll press us if we're higher up the pitch. And I think, you know, this is again just a failure, I think, of Dean Smith to properly read the opponents. And I know this is probably going to be something that we talk about a little bit later on. It seems as though he was unhappy with the way the team played in more specific ways. But again, this is just Villa being Villa. This is just, you know, coming out there, being lackadaisical. And I was pretty strongly worded in my tweet the other day, and I don't know if I should take it back or not, but it did feel like a bit of a middle finger to the fans again. Because once again, it was one of those where suddenly we decided to switch on and wake up because a goal had been scored against us. It's just not good enough, Cole.
Well, I think the issue too, though, in like what games are the players up for? Because you look at Spurs, we came out flying, and we're not even used to that. And albeit the mistake, we were on the front foot for a good portion of that game. I'm pretty sure we talked about it last week and we had the most possession, and that doesn't happen. I don't know what it is. Like, is it a confidence hindrance after that game? Is it, oh, we just want to be up for the big games? And I think obviously Dean Smith said it best in his post-match presser, because there's too many passengers. There's too many training ground players. They look fantastic when there's no pressure on, and I don't know if they don't have the stomach for it. I don't want to get too personal with that stuff, but I just don't know at this point. Like, at what point do some of these players look at themselves and think, I can do better, I know, I believe in myself, and put that shift in? Because we'll talk about this now, Danny. I'll come to you right back to you. If you're going to name, we'll say, anywhere between 2 to 3 passengers in this game, who would your top 2 or 3 be? Because I could probably almost name 5.
Oh, boy, are we naming and shaming?
Oh, sure. We might as well, because honestly, if Dean Smith's going to do it, we might as well, because we'll get to it in the Man City preview, because he even said it. There's a number of players that probably have lost their position in the cup final. They've basically played themselves out of a spot.
Instead of us being too critical, I guess, personally on players, let's frame it like this, right? Who's Dean Smith talking about when he says that players are losing their position in the cup final? And I'm interested in what Liam has to say as well. I think Konsa. I think that's evident from, you know, the fact that he went off the field.
Yeah.
I think Gilbert, you know, didn't seem to be around defensively, and then actually going forward was pretty much non-existent. Al-Ghazi, there has been a little bit of stick for him. A lot of fans were sort of the opinion that he was too soft in being taken off. But, you know, when it comes to concussions, none of us should be forming a judgment on it. It doesn't have to look like it hurt for it to actually be an issue. So I don't want to name him, but it could be somebody that Dean Smith's talking about. A few people said Trezeguet as well, but I don't see that. No. I don't see that. But I think Nakamba and Luiz are in danger. Both of them.
Really?
Both of them are in. Well, I like Nakamba. I really do. I think, to be honest, in any of our best midfields, Nakamba has to play right. But yeah, like, Luiz, again, is one of those players who goes totally missing unless it's a big game, or unless he's coming off the bench and has to prove something. It felt like that. We just had no grasp on the midfield whatsoever. But
absolutely.
Yeah, that's just, I guess, a few. Liam, what do you think? Maybe you can kind of be more specific than I am.
Well, you're talking about specific examples in the Canberra and Louise, the leagues that they've come from, they've got more time on the ball, so therefore in the Premier League, they could come across as being complacent.
Yeah, it's an issue.
And yeah, it is an issue, definitely. And we need them to be more on the front foot, more self-aware of the players around them, so therefore they can get the ball to the more attacking players, and therefore we could get a shot on goal and potentially score. Because at the moment, they're not performing to their best abilities. I mean, Louise has been good in the games previously before Southampton. But and talking about midfield as well, who would be your ideal midfield two or three? Because I personally don't know. Horahan definitely has to be in there for me. Horahan definitely.
Henry Lansbury.
Our squad, really, like beyond like the starting 11, it's just really bad.
I'm sorry, I think you should answer Liam's question, Cole.
It's tough. Oh my god, I don't know. Like, here, if I'm going to reformat the question, like, basically, when I look at it, like, who are you going to pick out of those three? I think if you're going to play, say, like, maybe more of a central defensive midfielder, someone who's going to be sweeping up the ball and just moving it, I would say Nakamba has to go there, just because I think his passing is pretty terrible. I think that was evident yesterday, and it has been for most of the season. So I'd have to say him. I just think when you look at his defensive cover, who can we improve on there? If you're going to play with two midfielders, say, in front of him, I guess it all depends going forward on McGinn, really. You have to think he walks back into that team, but at the same time, when do you put him in the right moment? Because you don't want to throw him into the wolves and then something happens. You never know there. So we'll pretend he's healthy. So you'd have to say McGinn. And then, I don't know. That the next one's a real toss-up. Do you go with Horahan? Do you go with Douglas Luiz? And in my opinion, it all depends on the game situation. So say if we're looking at Man City, we'll talk about this in the preview later in the week. But if you're kind of looking forward, I'd have to say Horahan, because I think Luiz has played himself out of it.
Yeah, I think the other thing with Horahan as well, you know, when you look at, you know, against like a Man City or something, you've also got a player there who can maybe get a goal out of nothing. And yeah. I think that's something that you perhaps want in a game like that. But I think my worry against Man City is that, you know, the last time we played them, it was another one of those where half the team just didn't bother to turn up at all.
Yeah.
Like, that was, I mean, we talk about how, like, because, I mean, I said personally that I think that the Southampton game was probably, you know, maybe equal to, like, maybe our worst performance of the season. But, you know, you've got a good bet of saying that 6-0 at Man City was pretty bad as well. And that wasn't a problem of, like, that wasn't a problem of tactics, I don't think. Again, that was a problem of desire. So, like, if you were to, you know, bring in Horahan and play like your best midfield or whatever it is, it doesn't matter unless all 11 players on the pitch are switched on. Like, it all affects it. I don't know what point I'm trying to make here, but it just kind of. I'm trying to just kind of explain like the helplessness of this situation almost.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Like, Liam, I'll come to you next because I think this is a good topic. We'll skip over the El Ghazi stuff for now. Actually, you know what? Let's not even talk about it, because I think it is what it is. We don't know how bad it is or if it's anything. Whatever. Let's talk about the main situation, and I think this is a huge thing, and it's been a theme probably for the last month or so at least, and that would be basically Villa waking up after the 60th minute, and it's almost like as soon as the clock hit 60, we're alive. How do you feel about that? Where do you think that even stems from? Give us your thoughts.
It's unexplainable, to be honest, because we've got such a weak squad in terms of there's no depth that surely we're going to be in that relegation fight. That doesn't matter how much money you invest into the squad. That in mind, surely the players start playing and wake up from the first minute, because we're going to face top opposition this season. We have already, and we're going to till the end of the season in the Man City's, your Liverpool's, who are going to come at you, and you have to be on your best behaviour for 90 minutes. And I'm speechless if I'm honest, because how professional footballer, you're performing for the fans. Surely you should start and play properly from the first minute.
Yeah, I think the thing when I look at it too, and a lot of people, I don't know why, but they throw it back to the relegation season. And when they throw it back to the relegation season, they talk about obviously how bad that was. And they're saying, oh, this is just as bad, if not worse. I'm thinking, well, we have Julian Lescott, who couldn't give a crap about this team and was more worried about his car. There are so many different things. Let's be realistic. We were not expecting to come up. What happened was an absolute miracle. And some people can say it was a fluke. We're ahead of schedule. You can even look at a similar team in Norwich. They weren't really planning to go up, especially the way they did last year. They had a kind of a five-year plan as well. They're ahead of schedule and they're probably going back down. I think it, in reality, and even when it comes to waking up after 60 minutes, I think it's, I hate to say it, I think it's down to preparation. I think it's just down to the squad. I don't really see it down to the unity, because you see some fans going on Twitter saying this team doesn't look like they're close, whatever. This is as close of a team I've seen in a long time. You have to think Lambert years, even maybe even before that, if I'm going to go back that far.
Wait, really?
I'd say so. Like, look at Jack. He's after the Spurs game, right up to Angles. He's consoling him, all that kind of stuff. If you look at that over the last few years under even Steve Bruce, like, I didn't get that sense. Like,
Jack looks as lonely a player as anybody right now, Cole.
Do you
man
think
like
so?
Yeah, like that why look at the way that the mistakes are happening. They're so individual. Like, you know, there's so many times as well where it's been like, you know, one of the players misreading. Like, it's like if Nakamba passes the ball back to like Konza or something. It's there's been so many occasions where like one of the center backs will just kind of, you know, realize 2 seconds later than the opposition what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not good chemistry. They should be you know, learning to deal with that kind of pressure in training.
Yeah, sorry, when I'm saying like unity and stuff like that, I mean like getting along, like the chemistry in terms of like.
But isn't that part of it?
It can be, but I'll even say it with me. Like, we've all played sports at a recreational level. I'm sure we've all had kind of close-knit teams, and I've been on close-knit teams, and we didn't do well. And it's went to the point that we're still all great friends, and we still got along. It just didn't click. It's different at the top end of the game, because then money becomes involved. People want more money. Some people can't be bothered. Some have more passion than others. That's at every level. It's at some term in terms of the passion. But in terms of, I'd say, how the players get along, it seems like it's been as good as it's been for as long as I can remember. Now, the chemistry in terms of on the pitch. Yeah, like, I'm almost kind of overlapping myself, Danny. I know what you mean. Like, it does all kind of come together. But also, I do think a lot of that's preparation. And I'm not, at some point, I'm not Dean Smith out or any of that stuff's crap. But at some point, it just comes down to the systems. It comes down to kind of the overall awareness on the pitch and the quality of the players. And I hate to say it, I think the turnover between last season and this season is going to be the evident factor in what cost us. Because it's just, there's so many people to embed in, and I don't want to blame Matt because that's a Fulham excuse. But there's just so many, there are so many players to replace, and obviously you can only spend up to a certain amount. And I think just the heavy turnover and the expectation, I think that's what's costing us. But you know what? Like, at the start of the season, Danny, I'll come to you. We all said we'll take 17th, and somehow we're still there after this weekend, barring somehow West Ham beat Liverpool or something.
First of all, right, don't doubt West Ham. They might beat Liverpool. Okay.
That's brave. I'm clicking that, I'm saving that, and I'm putting that on Twitter. No, I'm just kidding.
I will offer the opinion that by the time everybody listens to this podcast, we will be in 17th, because there will have been a West Ham drubbing of Liverpool, and you know, Jurgen Klopp will, you know, go on record to say that David Moyes is the best manager in the league.
Oh my God.
But But back to the point. Yeah, I mean, we're still 17th. Yeah.
But I don't know how.
No, I'll tell you how. It's because, you know, earlier in the season, we got some form together. And then somewhere along the line, we've just decided that we're going to be a total liability. Like, I don't know. I don't. The problem is we're so unpredictable. And I think, you're right, Cole. We've got to be fair. You know, this team's had a lot of challenges to deal with. There's no way that, you know, this situation should, you know, there's no way we should have been forced into this situation. But, like, you know, I'll say it, and everybody else is saying, yeah, I've got to say it. It's not been a problem for Sheffield United, has it?
No.
And, you know, that then come down to Chris Wilder being better than Dean Smith? Does that then come down to Sheffield United's players, like, being just, you know, having more desire than Villa? I don't know. Liam?
Yeah. Well, in some cases, I mean, Sheffield United did... I mean, we bought more than Sheffield United, of course. We spent over 120 million. But some of Sheffield United's players that were playing in the Championship are now playing in the Premier League. I mean, we've got, what, Mick, from the starting lineup I've got here, Mings playing in the Championship with Villa, Grealish, of course. But some signings that have took time to gel within the squad, to be honest. And it's going to from the start of the season, it was going to take them time to adjust to the league. And you expect now to be comfortable with the players around them. Point about Grealish, the reason I agree with you, Danny, because he's probably frustrated because the players around him are not offering any service. And he's the most talented player in the squad. Everyone knows that. And he knows that his next job as a football player is to get to England call. And in order to get the England call, he needs to get more goals, he needs to get more assists. And the players around him need to perform now in order for us to get to survive and for Grealish to get that England spot.
I think more than anything, it just looks like he cares. And if every other player on that pitch seemed to show the same passion as Jack Grealish, then, you know, this just wouldn't be a problem in the first place. But you get Jack Grealish is angry and he's screaming when things go wrong. And then you see other players, and I don't want to name names, but you see other players just kind of, you know, saunter along, heads down, kind of like, oh, well, that's a shame. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of that mentality.
Yeah.
I'd agree. Sorry to cut you off there, Liam. I just wanted to move on to another topic here, and I just thought of it. I think when we look at the squad, guys, and I think, you know, we look at it and we say, oh, it's not that great. Like, the depth isn't there. But now that you kind of think about it, do you think this was assembled? And I mean, we're going to lose players if we go down, like, regardless. It's inevitable if that happens. Hopefully not. But if it does, do you think most of this squad was put together for whatever happens? Like, you look at Konza, you look at Hawes, you look at several other players, like, you're going to lose your Grealishes, your McGinns, your Mings, which is obvious. But for the rest of it, I think, why would we lose them? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like most of those players were bought for either outcome. I could be wrong, but Danny, how do you feel about that? Because that's kind of the way I look at it, and that gives me more hope, regardless of what happens, compared to the last time this happened.
We have not set up for relegation. We haven't. The signings, the significant signings of, like, Wesley and Mings are evidence of that. And now what we're going to be in is in a situation where we might have to let go of some of our key players because the other players around them haven't been performing. I don't want this to be a relegation podcast. I know we've still got to get back into the Southampton game.
Yes.
the fact of the matter is this. This team is talented enough. This team has enough in them to give any team in the Premier League a challenge. I know this because I saw us, you know, 5 minutes away or 10 minutes away from beating unbeatable FC Liverpool earlier in the season.
Oh, that still hurts. Yeah.
This is a case of the players not being switched on enough. I hate ever going there because I am just a pundit. I am just a fan who has never played at that level. But unfortunately, what I have is a subject area of 20 teams in the Premier League. And if I was to, if you're going to chalk it down to effort, if you're going to chalk it down to focus and passion and, you know, undesirability to get relegated, you know, this is, we're bottom, maybe. You know, unless you're going to talk about Bournemouth or you're going to talk about Norwich at times. And it's just a shame because we know what they're capable of. That's what this is.
You know what? I think a lot of this comes down. Everyone says you have to have a good spine to be successful. And on paper, we have a decent spine. Like, you can start in goal right now with Reyna. You know he cares. You can see the frustration and passion in there. God, that game could have been way worse yesterday if it wasn't for him, because he made, off the top of my head, at least two or three fantastic saves. Sorry,
what's
Danny, go on.
Yeah, what's that all about, by the way? Because I know we've got to get back into the game, right? You finish what you're saying about Reyna, right? But how the heck do you know you come out of a Premier League game having scored like what was it having had like 4 shots to 28 against another team who was like in the you know lower half of teams in the Premier League?
I think it's down to. Honestly, I think it's also down to the setup, and I think it's the reliability on the keeper. You look at when we bought Tom Heaton, you knew that when he was at Burnley, especially when they came up twice, they were going to face a lot of shots, and they were sound defensively. They had a system that essentially worked out from the back, and they were going to be tough and gritty. We've faced them twice this year. We know how they play. You look at Reyna, who, honestly, I didn't really consider... I'm actually surprised how well he's performing in terms of the saves he's making, because I always thought he was more of a distribution keeper more than anything, just kind of ahead of his time in that way, in some sense, because some balls he made yesterday were a little scary. But it's tough. Like, when you look at this team overall, and I'll kind of get back into what I was going about, you look at Reyna, he cares. It's evident. But at the same time, point, Danny, like you just said, it doesn't matter who's in that spine. If you're going to concede over 20 shots in a game and have one on target, what can you expect? Like, to rely on a keeper to make that many saves is unrealistic, and to be this far in the season, and this even goes within the Southampton game, to face that many shots and expect to say, oh well, we're going to just outscore teams, because that's almost like what it feels like now. And at this point in the season, teams in and around us are going to start setting up shop. They're going to become gritty games. And I think moving forward, and this will especially kind of be the telling sign for Dean Smith and his coaching staff and these players, what are they made of and what are they willing to do? Because we're getting into the dog days of the season, and excuses have, in my opinion, been run out, because you look at the rest of our schedule. I think someone on Twitter compared them all. We have quite the run in, and it's not going to be easy. And eventually we're just going to have to be, I hate to say it, you're going to have to be like a kind of Warnock boring style set up shop. And it's going to come to that point where that has to work or you're going to go down. Like, it's, I don't really know what to say in that regards. Liam, if I bring this back to you, we'll get back into this game now, because we've been kind of going off here. Let's briefly acknowledge the last goal. Do you agree with the mentality just to go for it, see what happens? Or do you think part of you kind of looks at it and think, well, you know what, that does hurt the goal difference?
Well, at times of the season, of course, he scored late on against Watford and against Leicester in the Carabao Cup. For me, I mean, what's not... to lose, we're going to lose the game anyway. But what frustrated me was, yes, it was going to, Stuart Armstrong was going to score that goal, but Pepe Reina jogging back, I don't like to name names, but Pepe Reina jogging back to the goal line, whereas you got Frederick Gilbert, who's sprinting, working so hard to get back to that line, even though he knows that Stuart Armstrong is going to score that goal. Going back to the point, you've got nothing to lose, really. If we get the draw, we get the draw. But I don't know. It's frustrating, ultimately. It's really frustrating.
Oh, absolutely. Danny, let's have you chime in on here, because when we look at this last goal, I think obviously, like, you know, we have to get a point here. It's desperation. You see a lot of teams do that throughout the season. Is there any concerns with you for this goal? Because I look at it, there's two ways, like I just said to Liam. Either you're going for it and you concede, or something happens. Like, it's a 50-50 chance, really.
Yeah, I haven't got a problem with it. I just think this, you know, because it's basically us trying to get a point, us fighting to get something back in the game. Pepe Reina's had a go to do that, and that's fine. You know, he can come in there, he can cause trouble for the goalkeeper. But again, this just brings it back to us just leaving it way too late to actually try to do anything. We're still messing about with the ball in the back. I mean, let's get a bit tactical here as well. There was, you know, this is Villa acknowledging that late on that we've got to be a bit more direct.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the best part of about 60 minutes, we tried playing the ball out the back against Southampton, fully knowing it wasn't doing anything. And this, again, is just a result of us waiting till the 60th minute to actually try and get something back. So if you're wondering whether I'm mad about the Pepe Reina goaling error, I don't know what you want to call it. Nah, I'm not. You know, that goal should hurt them, and I hope it hurts the players, because they need to understand, you know, what the result of this is, what the result of sitting back and being passengers for 90 minutes is. It puts you in helpless situations like that, where you can only really, you know, you can only really hope to risk it all.
Absolutely. You know what, guys, let's wrap it up there. We'll get your match balls, Liam. This is your first kind of addition of the whole cast being on it. So let's get your match ball first, sir.
For me, for first ever 500 to hold, I do write Man of the Match articles, and unfortunately I didn't get to write mine this week. But for the Southampton game, the only person, in my opinion, who tried was Samatta, because every time the balls to him were inaccurate. They were so inaccurate. And it was Konsa and Hawes just launching the ball up to him. But fair play to him, he did try and sprinted so hard to try and get those balls. And yes, he was unsuccessful. But for me, my match ball, my man of the match, would be Mbwana Samatta.
Fair enough. Danny?
Yeah, I'd agree that Samatta had a good game. I think he played really well, and I do think he's a heck of a player. Just another one who just suffered from not having any service, and there was so many times when the players around him just made the wrong passes. He also, nearly scored, I think, but he was offside.
Apparently, our players don't know what that is.
Goal was off.
Yeah, they don't, because Trezeguet as well had an opportunity where he really should have buried it, but I think the whistle was already blown for offside, which was a bit dodgy, but whatever. I'm going Pepe Reina, because there was 28 shots, man. What a joke. Yeah, what a joke, first of all. What is a keeper supposed to do? You know, and if we're not going to count that second one, he's only conceded one really in normal circumstances throughout that whole game. He's tried his best. To be honest, he was our best performing player. You know, if you're going to look at any other websites to kind of tell you who's got the highest man of the match score or whatever, it's just going to be Reina everywhere, because every single player on that pitch was just not there. That's including Jack Grealish, by the way. I thought he had a very poor game, by the way. I think it's worth saying that. I don't like giving him stick, because he's allowed to have one poor game every now and then.
Absolutely. Okay. My match ball. You know what? I'll read off some. I just looked at the possession stats. Somehow we had more possession. 54%. So considering we've had 54% possession, Southampton had 28 shots overall to our 4 overall, then 9 on target to our 1. I think I'd have to agree with Danny here. I think you just stick with Pepe Reina. I just feel bad for the guy. You can't judge him off the last goal, really. To keep it at 1-0, I think, is a massive thing, in the fact that it wasn't 3-4, maybe even 5. Again, I think at this point I'm kind of clutching straws here and just looking for any positive. I guess it helps with the goal difference. I guess it keeps us in 17th for now. So I will stick it there. But anyways, guys, thank you very much to Liam and Danny for joining me. Of course, this has been the 7500 to Holt Holtcast. We will be back on a Thursday for the preview for the Carabao Cup final against Manchester City. Of course, you can find Liam on Twitter. Liam, sorry, what is your handle again? Because I forgot to write it down.
That's fine. West mid footy.
It is West Mid Footy. There you go. Thank you for saving me. And of course, you can find Danny on Twitter at Razzajourno. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at Talkcast and Villain. Of course, all together, we make up the 7500 to Holtcast. Go on the website, www.7500toholt.com. And of course, up the Villa.